Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Stand-up comedian Marc Maron kicks off his Out of the Garage tour at the Egg in Albany, New York, this Friday, February 1st. The title of the tour refers to the home studio in his garage, the primary location used to record his very popular podcast, WTF, with Marc Maron. The podcast features perceptive, stream-of-consciousness introductions and lengthy, usually one-on-one, conversations with iconic entertainment personalities. The podcast premiered in 2009 and regularly hits number one on the iTunes charts and has been called a must-listen by Vanity Fair, The New York Times, and many other publications. Marc was just named one of the 50 funniest people by Rolling Stone and has appeared on Conan O'Brien more than any other stand-up comedian, a record 48 times and counting. He joins us now. Marc Maron, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'm very excited to speak with you. So the tour, your comedy tour, is called Out of the Garage, but of course you haven't actually just been staying in the garage. You'd go out and do stand-up fairly often. Why was it time now, though, to put an official stand-up tour together?
There's a lot of people that haven't seen me, and I hear from them a lot, and there's a lot of areas I haven't played, for instance, Albany, ever, really. And we just decided to take a couple months and line up some dates and see what's going on out there. It just seemed like the time to do it. My stand-up's strong, and I'm excited to get it out there, and I'm sort of building up to taping a special, and the time was now.
How do you know when your stand-up is strong?
When I feel good about it. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. I'm just at a point in my life on stage where I'm very comfortable, and people are coming out specifically to see me, which is relatively new, and I have a lot of freedom of mind, and I think I'm about as good as I've ever been, and I know that just because I've been doing this a long time, and I have a sense of that. I know when I'm not good.
Do you listen back to old sets or your old albums, and can you tell the difference between now and those?
I don't listen to myself hardly at all, even when I should, even when I'm working on stuff and I'm taping it to, theoretically grow from it to find, what I improvised and how to integrate that into the act. I don't even do that. But when I do listen, like sometimes I have to go back to CDs to see whether I've done something or I haven't. I can definitely tell a difference. I can tell a difference when I see myself on TV. I can definitely, absolutely.
When you are a guest on another podcast, I've heard you on the Nerdist podcast and on Doug Loves Movies. Do you ever go back and listen to that?
No.
No?
I don't listen to my own podcast. I don't listen, and it's not out of, anything other than just like, I don't know where everyone finds the time to do all these things. If somebody emails me or somebody says on Twitter that so-and-so said this about me or you might want to listen to this, I'll do it. But I don't generally listen to my appearances on other programs. That would be a little odd, wouldn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I was there.
I
know what happened generally. So it would be sort of sad and completely narcissistic if I just sat around listening to myself. I mean, I feel weird enough when I read interviews with myself, but that's a different thing. You never know how what you say is going to be framed in the print or how they pull it apart or use it. So that's always a little more necessary.
Well, and as you say, just taking the time to go listen to everything that you've been doing would be, you would never sleep. It would be ridiculous.
That's right. But sometimes when I look at myself in print, I'm sort of surprised that I put ideas and things together so clearly. And when I look at my stuff in print, it actually helps me realize that I know things that I'm not really that conscious of. Because when I just talk, even when I talk at the beginning of the podcast, it's in the moment. I don't really prepare much. So I'm thinking out loud. And a lot of times, not unlike my recording of my stand-up sets, when I think out loud or when I improvise, it doesn't always stick. It's something that happens in that moment. And, I'm happy that it happens, but sometimes those thoughts and bits, should be worked on or polished or integrated into my personal story or act. So sometimes it's helpful.
You talk a lot about yourself and your personal life in your podcast and in your stand-up. Most people do. That's where their comedy comes from, obviously, their real life. And you were featured in an episode of Morgan Spurlock's Hulu series, A Day in the Life. Why do you think it is that you don't mind fans who are strangers knowing so much about your personal life?
Oh, I don't really know how else to do it. Mm-hmm. It's always been what when I talk about other things, or if I just write jokes, or I just speak in a general way, no matter how clever the joke is, or what kind of laugh it gets, if I'm not personally invested in it, other than I made this funny thing, it's not really that satisfying. I think that part of me wants to emotionally connect. I don't know if that's healthy or not, but it's just the way I do it. And it seems to be working to a certain degree right now. People who listen to me have a very personal relationship with me. It just seems to be how I do it. I mean, there are some things I don't talk about in depth, and there are some things that I keep to myself. Not a lot, but I try to keep it either funny or engaged in whatever struggle I'm in. But don't worry, there's a few things that I'm keeping personal.
That was going to be my next question. Is there anything you're keeping private? Not in an effort to get you to reveal it now, but just, wondering if there was anything, which you've just said there is, and what makes you keep those things private? It's just a personal sense, a line you feel out?
I'm very open, but there are some things that may be sort of unsettled or unresolved in me and open-ended, and outside of whatever public struggle I have in terms of what I put out there, there are certain struggles. Like, I don't want to literally be sort of broadcasting or performing some sort of cry for help.
Mm-hmm.
So that tone, the more sort of unresolved emotional issues that I have that are not deeper, but just a little, I don't want to be sad.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to sort of, characterize the struggle that I'm having or whatever I'm going through or whatever my thoughts are in a way that I can handle. You don't really want to get out on a mic either in private or in public and, come unhinged. So I try to limit that, or if those things are percolating inside of me, figure out how to frame them a little bit so it's not just something that I'm not too taxing or asking the audience for too much.
Because you are first a comedian.
I am a comedian, and I am I'm something else, it seems, as well. I don't know what exactly it is. I mean, I'm a comic. I like to talk to people. I think about things. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, that's what I've been doing more than half my life is stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, first and foremost, there's that.
When you started the podcast, or maybe before you started it, how did you, or did you know how it would work, or that it would work so well? I mean, I don't imagine even, 4 years ago that anybody could have known that podcasts would be as popular as they are, but that you would tap into something that so many people would like and that so many entertainers would want to engage in with you.
No, I had no idea. We didn't know what was going on. I mean, I was in trouble, really. I mean, I was, I'd sort of gotten out of keeping myself on the road a lot. I did morning radio for a year and a half over at Air America, and that was very exciting, but it was a very, daunting time schedule, and I needed the gig.
Mm-hmm.
But, arguably, living in all Los Angeles and then, moving to New York by myself, newly married, and once that went down the drain, everything went down the drain. My marriage disintegrated, that job went away, and my stand-up work had dried out. And, I was in the middle of this horrendous divorce, and I just had to take another job at a new version of Air America doing some online video show, political. And that sort of crapped out, and they fell apart again. But it got me out of the divorce financially, and there I was, sitting there with my producer. We'd been fired,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't really know enough to take our security passes away or kick us out of the building. So
right.
We just started kind of breaking in at night and, using the equipment, because I'd heard these podcasts were happening. There were a few people doing it. I didn't really listen to any, but I knew that that I enjoyed that microphone, the radio microphone, and the sort of intimacy that it was capable of. And we just started doing it. We committed to a schedule. That was all we really committed to, that we would do it Monday and Thursday, come hell or high water. and then just see what happened with the show. I mean, the early shows, you know, there's, you know, a couple of guests or sometimes people hanging around the whole show. And, you know, not till I got into L.A. did it really start to evolve. Once I set up the garage, it started to become what it is now. I had no expectation. I just needed to be doing something. I couldn't really get stand-up work. My management had hung me out to dry. I was sort of a marginal figure. So I just needed to somehow keep doing something. And it worked out. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about bringing people to stand-up shows because I wasn't touring. So I just needed to talk. Mm-hmm. And it turned out I needed to talk to other people, other comics, like-minded people, in a fairly genuine way, not even in a broadcasting way. I needed help. I was not in a good place. That's how that evolved. And the only expectation that we set on ourselves was to deliver these shows, no matter what, whatever they were.
And the podcast lasts about an hour, give or take, often a little bit longer. How did you settle on that time? Like, when you book it, do you say, this will take an hour?
I feel like, you know, for what I'm doing, you know, without unnecessarily pushing it out there. I mean, you know, you can go as long as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'd like to get at least an hour because, you know, in a one-on-one conversation that, you know, is fairly spontaneous, you don't know when it's going to break. You don't know when it's going to break into something genuine, something authentic, and you know, something that is real talk that is somewhat effortless. So I find that, you know, about usually two-thirds of the way through, something happens. Now, however long that's going to take and however long the arc of that is, you know, I'll let it go longer if necessary. But you seem to be able to, I think an hour is reasonable, a nice chunk of time. It's usually just, I'm just following the arc of the conversation. Generally, I'm not just doing blather or promoting something. And usually, you know, within that time, I'll know where somebody's going to go. You know, whether they're going to go deep or they're going to go funny or we're just going to keep it at, you know, at this level. And you know, I don't mind any way it goes, but I just find that about an hour is about enough for a one-on-one conversation.
How do you know? Because it seems to me you're sincerely and genuinely engaged in the conversation or else it wouldn't work. But you can still sense that break when it happens?
Yeah, no, you listen. You know, over the course of the thing, I've become very able and willing and excited to listen and provide some sort of space where people can, you know, speak freely. You know, I'm not trying to push any buttons or court controversy or anything else, but I think that as they go on, you know, what I'm really doing is creating some sort of audio portrait of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ongoing struggle of my life or whatever's going on in my life is one thing. But it's really about who I'm talking to and whether or not you get a sense of them as a person. You know, most of the people I talk to are public people, or some of them, you know, people that no one knows. But really what I'm sort of feeling out is do I see something, even if it's for 5 minutes, where I'm like, that's who that person is, you know, and that's a great sort of attribute of this person's personality that no one really processes. And you know, sometimes I'm very sensitive to it, and I don't know that people see what I see. But yeah, it's all engaged, but there are moments where you're like, wow, that just happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm glad that's on tape.
Have you had guests who haven't had to have that break because they came in completely comfortable and open? Either because they
I mean, I'm not saying that break is always or that, you know, it's a system or anything. It's just there's a moment where, like any situation, you know, it takes a while to get comfortable, and you know, the garage is cozy, and you know, if you can feel like you're not on the mics anymore, that's great. Yeah, some people come in overly prepared because I guess, you know, doing the show, certain people have an idea of what it's supposed to be. I don't know that I have that idea, but there are certain episodes that sort of defined a tone for the show that it had to be sort of confessional or revealing or emotional, really, if it's just genuine and happening in the moment, I'm good with it. You know, yeah. Some people listen to episodes. Jon Favreau was very prepared. He was, you know, he literally dictated it. During the show, he's like, "So this is where you're gonna," and I'm like, "I don't. You clearly have systemized this thing. I'm not sure I have the system."
Right. Whereas with Michael Keaton, you were like, "Let's get to the bleeping movie star bleep."
with Michael Keaton, I mean, that was all very spontaneous, mm-hmm. very exciting in that he's always been an interesting guy, and no one's really heard from him in a long time. And I think people forget just how huge a star that guy was. And he's a guy that made very interesting choices. And he's also sort of an odd bird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when that all happened, with him, you know, you sort of want to, like, sometimes I'm not as thorough. I'm not an interviewer. I'm
right.
a conversationalist. So,
yep.
you know, when people say I'm good at interviewing, I don't really necessarily think of them like that because, like, I have to be careful not to blow by big things, you know, like I don't want to leave an interview and go, oh man, I forgot to talk about the Oscar, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is completely possible for me, especially with musical guests. With music, it's weird because you have an artist in there who has fanatic fans who know everything they did. And, you know, there's no way I'm going to be that guy. Yeah, I don't have very many bands like that. And the bands I do have, I'm not even sure I know everything about them, but music fans are very thorough.
Right.
So I'm a little insecure about those sometimes. But with Keaton, it was just, I had no idea where that was going to go. But he was, the way it all happened, and just that, you know, I was sitting here watching the new Batman, and I realized that we had this on and off email relationship trying to get him to do the show. So then, like, that day I'm watching the Batman, I emailed him. He's like, yeah, you know, maybe tomorrow, that'd be good. So I'm like, okay. All right, so tomorrow comes, I'm like, what, are we doing this? He's like, I don't know, you know, I got to talk to a guy about a thing. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll leave it open. He's like, yeah, leave it open. And then, like, a few hours later, he's like, all right, I'm leaving now. I'm leaving Santa Monica. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll get set up then. So, you know, he ended up coming over at, like, 5 in the afternoon. And I just, we just sat down and, you know, and I turned the mics on, you know, before they even sit down, really, usually, mm-hmm. and just, so the thing kind of unfolds organically, and that was that.
And in getting ready to talk to you, I read something I hadn't realized from just listening to the podcast, but if the guest asks you to take something out, you will honor that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in, you know, putting people in a position they don't want to be in. You know, usually people are candid enough with me that, and it's never, no one's ever asked me to take anything out about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only instances where people have wanted stuff taken out, it's where they felt like they may have said something about somebody else that they, you know, in retrospect were not comfortable with, or they might have said something that would indict them in a way that they weren't comfortable with. And that was specifically Andy Dick, and it was a legal matter.
Well, there you go. It's important not to get pulled into court for your podcast.
Yes, exactly.
A two-part sort of question. Can you imagine ever stopping the podcast? And then the second part is, or stopping doing stand-up?
Yeah, I can very easily imagine doing nothing but listening to records and wandering around. I have no problem imagining that. Would it happen? I don't know. I go through periods where I get tired of myself, and I get tired of talking about myself, and then I think, well, maybe I should talk about other things. You know, I spent, you know, 2 years doing, you know, political talk radio on mm-hmm. some level, and doing comedy around that and engaging in that way. And, you know, and I've sort of completely taken that out of my my life, because I just felt it was disingenuous in that, you know, I may have been angry about politics, but, you know, on a deeper level, you know, I'm angry. So why not just deal with that? But I do sort of get tapped out on my own cycles, and I think that I'm evolving on some level. But that's when I get tired, or when I think I can't do it anymore. It's like, do I have anything else to say? Do I have anything to say to this person? Am I interested in this person? And every time that I freak myself out about either of those things, it's almost like I literally back myself into a corner, you know, mentally and emotionally. And that just turns out to be where I do my best work, you know, on stage or in conversation. If I'm up against the wall and I'm holding myself there, you know, struggling out of that, is my most creative place. So I guess as long as I keep throwing myself up against the wall, you know, I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
Mark, thank you very much for taking some time out of your day to talk about yourself again with me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to see you at the Egg on February 1st.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Mark Maron's Out of the Garage stand-up tour will be at the Egg in Albany, New York this Friday, February 1st. To learn more, visit theegg.org. His half-hour scripted television series, Maron, which we didn't have time to talk about, was picked up by IFC for 10 episodes and should air sometime this year. To keep track of that, and of course his podcast and other projects, visit WTFpod.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.